This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on February 20th, 2013. We're at the MVP Summit, and we're talking to John Papa and Ward Bell. Ward's been a guest many times. I don't think John's been on before. Can you give yourself a brief introduction?
John was on once.
Oh, you were on? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. John was on once.
I don't think you were on that one.
Introduce yourself. I missed that show.
That's okay. I think I missed it, too. So, John Papa, what do? I do a lot of web work, whether it's Silverlight or HTML or JavaScript or God knows what these days. But I used to work at Microsoft as an evangelist, and now I'm just a Pluralsight trainer on the loose.
Okay, and I'm Ward Bell, and I'm a founder and technology guy at IdeaBlade, and we make products, and we help people build applications that have heavy clients, and in this case, we're here to talk about a certain kind of client, I think.
Yes, and here at the summit, actually, there were a few things announced this week, a few things that were shipped from Microsoft. Could you summarize some of that, John?
Yeah, the standard thing is the great long-named product that came out this week, the Microsoft Visual Studio 2012.
I finally got it. It's the ASP.NET and WebTools 2012.2 release.
Thank you.
Is that the home edition?
Yeah, you know how I remember it. It's got features for ASP.NET. It's got new WebTools. It's shipped with Visual Studio, or it's like add-on pack for Visual Studio 2012. So it's 0.2. It's incremental. What I came up with last night, I'm pretty happy with, is, you know, like when you get a video game and then they come out with like the next version of the video game and you're like, wait a minute, this is just a map pack. Like they just add on some new maps. That's what I think of this. It's just like a map pack for the last release.
DLC.
Yeah, exactly.
So aptly named, one of the things, Ward and I actually both shipped a piece of something that's actually an add-on or another map pack to the product. One of the features that was pulled into this is you can now, as a community member, you can create a VizX for Visual Studio to create a template for MVC4. So what we both did is we created a community template. Ward's got one for his product Breeze, and I created one for a spa-related item that I call Hot Towel, which is got a nice little tagline of, you know, you don't want to go to spa without a towel. So,
and then for those of you who don't know, VizX is a Visual Studio extension, and you can get those by going to the gallery. We hope that it will be in the gallery. The gallery will be up and running, but you go to a Visual Studio extension gallery, and you download it, and it's really safe. It doesn't actually install anything. It just all appears in a folder, actually.
It's like a zip file, really.
Exactly. But then it magically shows up as part of the file new experience.
The thing I like about VizX is, like you're saying, they don't really hurt things. So like the install is usually like 12 seconds, and then you can disable or uninstall them and it actually works.
And there really is almost no uninstall. It's just, it just deletes it.
Right. which is kind of nice.
There's no DLLs going on or anything like that, which is good.
So we should probably mention that ASP.NET vnext/vnext is where you can find out more information about the web tool too.
And yeah. Yep.
They got videos.
Yeah, there's the vnext, and there's the /page/application URL at ASP.NET that you can, it's a nice long URL. I usually just point to vnext, as John does.
It works from there.
So I install update 2, I grab your extension, and then I do file new project, and what can happen if I select your template?
Yep, so you go to file new project, MVC4, because there's like a couple on that list even, if you have to choose. And then once you go to there, you get the nice short list of templates that you can install, one of which, after you install my VizX, will say Hot Towel Single Page Application. Mm-hmm. You choose that, it then it installs. It actually loads in the NuGet packages that come with the VizX, which will give you a blank spa template with actually really nothing you need to pull out. That's the nice side of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to create a template where you could start with a spa and then build on top of it. So the idea was you open up a new project, you've got everything you need to build in routing and paging and data binding and going and getting data from a remote server with Web API, Razor, bundling, minification. Mm. Everything's pulled in from both server side and client side, and it gives you a little designed Bootstrap application using Twitter Bootstrap, and then you can build your own views and view models the way you want to.
Okay, so what's in here? There's Twitter Bootstrap, there's Knockout, I'm assuming.
Yes.
What else?
So, that's good. There's a bunch, actually. So, you need to have some kind of page structure and menu navigation. So, for that, and view composition, which means I've got a view, I've got some code, got to put them together somehow and make it show up on a screen. For that, I used Randall, which is a relatively new JavaScript library by somebody I think we're all familiar with, Rob Eisenberg.
Yeah, we had him on to talk about that.
Yeah, did you? Good. Rob's brilliant.
Yes.
And Durandal is, if people don't know who he is, he built Caliburn and Caliburn Micro for XAML.
And he also has a one of the physics. He contributed his own physics to this.
Oh. Yes. Okay. So there's a Durandal physics for Spot Temple 2. Nice thing about this one is you get Durandal for that. You get Knockout for data binding. You get jQuery, which always seems to be needed for something.
Right.
You get, when I say Knockout, you get Bootstrap, Knockout. You get Moment. There's something I'm forgetting because of the breeze.
Oh, you would forget that one.
Wouldn't be something.
I think it's called Breeze. Right. Yes, yes. So Breeze is the Breeze is one of the add-ons I added in because, as I always tell Ward, you don't know you need it until after you write a SPA, and then you start realizing all these really hard data things you do.
Okay.
So Breeze kind of handles all that stuff for you. It gives you querying, link-like querying, data caching, sharing data between screens, all that kind of stuff, and transactions, change tracking.
Validation. All that good stuff.
Yep. It makes offline. It a lot easier. Offline support, and it works real well with local storage or IndexedDB or anything you want to use. And then server-side, you get most of the ASP.NET stack.
Okay.
The useful parts, I say.
The useful parts, okay.
So sometimes when you throw a bunch of stuff together, it all plays well, and other times it's kind of fighting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that, well, two questions, I guess. If I install this, do things play well together? And then two, did that take some work to get them to play well together, or do they all kind of snap together pretty modularly?
I tried to find a bunch of libraries that just absolutely never play well together and give them to everybody, cause them nightmares.
Right, thank you.
So, no.
Well, I was a little more interested in how, if you're using any kind of dependency management, like a require or AMD.
Yes.
Yes. Like that. Yeah, so to answer your question seriously, yes, it does play well together.
Mm-hmm.
It was not difficult to get them to play well together, which is the reason I like that pile of things together, the Good. Stack that I okay. chose. And under the covers, Durandal uses require with AMD. And the reason I really got hooked on Durandal, to be honest with you, was not because Rob had gone down that road before, but from my own experiences and Ward's as well, going through AMD with requires, it's not fun. Mm-hmm. It can be very complicated to use, especially when you're used to more of like an inject type world, and you're just used to .NET handling dependencies for you.
Yeah, dependencies are just supposed to show up.
Yeah.
You just put them in the constructor, right? And then everything works.
And when I've got 50 JavaScript files, and I need to order them in the right sequence in an HTML file, I want to shoot myself in the head, because it's just not fun. Whereas AMD makes it easier. And AMD itself is a learning curve, so Durandal actually takes a lot of that out of the way.
Yes.
So how does AMD compare to, do you not use any of the ASP.NET bundling minification stuff, or does that not really?
I still do, actually.
Okay.
So that was the hard part with AMD. So there's this library called require.js,
mm-hmm.
and it does a pattern called AMD. It's asynchronous module definition or declaration,
mm-hmm.
something like that, or dependency. It's got a D in there. Just make it your own word.
I thought they made CPU chips.
I think they do that,
okay,
too.
Okay.
Bowling balls.
Right.
No, that was AMF.
AMF, yes.
Okay.
So what that does for you is require will help you do dependency resolution. It'll help you order your scripts properly. And optionally, there's another library called RJS, R.js,
mm-hmm.
which will actually help you optimize and bundle for you. What I like to do is use ASP.NET's bundling and minification through the web optimization library, and then just use require for the asynchronous loading of the files.
And the dependency management.
On the client side, then.
Yes.
It's all on the client.
And with this package, you can do that. Or you can optionally use Rob, and Durandal has created a little file inside of the Durandal folder called optimizer.exe. If you run that file after you're done, it'll build. It'll take all your JavaScript, compile it, bundle it, package it together in one file, and then load that for you. So that's what you do after you deploy. Well, when you deploy.
Right.
When you're developing, you don't bother with that.
Okay.
But he did a nice job of that, because if you've ever played with require, there's some configuration that's involved if you want to do the bundling, the optimization, the whole one package thing. And he took that away. As long as you want the smooth path of I want my whole application in one little shot and one file and send it down, he's made it just push a button and go, which is really quite an accomplishment. It's one of the nice features of Durandal.
And it's optional, too.
And it's totally optional. You don't have to push that button.
Well, now how much would you pay?
we can talk about Durandal because Rob's not here to talk about it.
Yes.
But
it's a key feature. Durandal, Knockout, and Breeze are really the three linchpins to making the SPA work, in my opinion.
I agree. Breeze being the major linchpin, but then there's, people who had a good experience with Caliburn Micro can bring that feel right over. So if they're used to composing views, however deep, it works that way. It has nice conventions for doing that, so you're not doing a lot of hand wiring. It does great logging to the console, because as soon as you've got these things that are auto-wiring things, your immediate reaction is, what if something went wrong? What the heck's going on? And he does a great job of outputting that to the console. He intercepts the mistake, the exceptions that you get when you're doing screen changing with Sammy, which if you've ever ended up in the middle of Sammy because something wasn't quite, a route wasn't quite right, that can be...
Sammy just says error.
Yeah, it just says error.
Which is very helpful.
But Rob tells you this is what you were doing before you got lost.
Okay.
And he does that also for a lot of the binding stuff too, so you get a report that if a binding broke, you get it there. One of the things I did recently was I also, because he didn't mention, but Toaster is also part of the Hot Towel stack. Toaster is a fly-up, John's fly-up toasts that appear.
Yep.
And it turns out to be a great debugging tool, because you're sitting there with your eyes focused on one thing and wondering when something goes wrong, and you can just easily wire in the knockout binding failures. They pop right up as toasts and big red and say, oh, that's what's wrong. You can meter it yourself, instrument it yourself, and throw it in there. And so you're not torn between, do I look at the surface, do I look at the JavaScript, or do I look at the console, which you often can't see all those three things at the same time. So Toast has been great for that, even though its real point is as a user experience feature to let the user see what's going on. So you talked about it sounded like a soup of, you know, like just throw a little of this in and throw a little of that in. But in fact, John, over time, has put together a sequence of these libraries that have been chosen to work well together. He's proven it out in his own apps. And as it turns out, we're taking this hot dog towel structure ourselves.
Hot dog.
Hot dog. We're taking this hot towel thing ourselves out on the road. We're using it as IdeaBlade as part of our professional services for people who say we want to use the knockout. We want to use knockout, but we want to build applications. So we're taking a hot towel out there, and that's the foundation on which they're building applications.
And that's been a friction point that I've seen from people is, well, they say, well, you want to use knockout. They immediately don't know what knockout is. They want to get into it. Then they realize, well, I've got data binding, but I don't have navigation routing.
Anything else.
Anything. Right. So they're like, well, knockout isn't as good as Backbone, Angular, Ember. Pick your favorite library of the week. Say, well, it's different. Some of those libraries are more like a framework. They do a lot for you. Kind of like Prism did with, you know, XAML. Well, knockout just does data binding. That's all it does. So if you get into it and you're new, the friction point is, I don't know which of the 10 million libraries that are out there to go pull in. I don't even know what they do, because half of them have names like Hot Towel.
Right.
That don't tell you exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
So if they've got a cool name like that, it's great, but what does a person who's new to it do? Mm-hmm. So the whole idea was, we've been going down this road, we've built a stack that we feel works well. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not saying this is the only stack that works. We're just saying, if you want to get into it and you're not sure where to start, this is a great starting point.
Because people want to build applications. They don't want to do binding. They don't want to do data access. They want to deliver an application. And there was really no good answer for that. And I think that this is a great foundation.
Okay.
And I didn't, you know, I can say that because he did it.
And the sweet spot for this would be line of business applications, right?
Well, that's what we've looked at for the most part.
That's where his company, IdeaBlade, focuses most of their efforts on. I would say the only place I wouldn't use this, like immediately, somebody's building a website, like you're building a site, you know, and it's just purely read-only data, it's overkill. Right. We announced it. There's WordPress and things like that for that.
Yep.
So if you want SEO and all that, templating of any kind is not a great option. But if you want to build an application that's going to have any kind of CRUD, you know, or you're doing read and write data, this can work for you.
Is there an SEO story? I mean, is there, do you, because you can do SPA. Okay.
There are ways to do it.
Uh-huh.
And I've talked recently with Ryan Niemeyer, one of the three heads of the Knockout Hydra, including Steve Sanderson, about, you know, what do you tell people with SEO? Because that's really, the real issue is the templating engine. Knockout has templating built in, just like if you want to use handlebars or mustache or anything else. All that data is dynamic on the page. So if you want to get search optimization, you need a way to get that data there and make it searchable. And there really aren't great stories for that, but there are, if you go onto Stack Overflow, you find some of the solutions people have done. But I often challenge, if you're building an application that's more business-like with CRUD, do you really want people searching that data anyway?
Right.
Yeah, my Bank of America account, SEO is not really what I'm after there, right?
Usually the places they want something like that is like an Amazon type.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon wants their stuff to be searchable, right. You know? That's where you go through those pains. Mm-hmm.
But then again, that's not a good candidate for single-page application like Amazon. Well, maybe, probably not. I don't know.
I'd say it's a good hybrid type option. So shopping type, I've seen one customer of mine was working with a shopping type app. And what I suggested to them was a hybrid MVC spot type application. Because they have different sections of their app mm-hmm. where they wanted to build up these screens where with shopping experience or searching or profile. And each of those fundamental towers were like a view on MVC. And once they're on there, they want that experience to be super fast. So that part of it was spa. The view serves it up. Everything stays and goes there. But once they switch over from searching to purchasing, mm-hmm. that switches into another mode and lets them do something else. For them, they didn't need SEO, so it made it easier. But they ended up having something like 6 or 7 views with MVC. That was it. Mm-hmm. And then each view had somewhere along the line, an MVC view. Each view of those had probably 3 or 4 views for the spa. So it was like a 20 or 30 screen app. But it was really only, you know, just a handful of views in MVC.
Yeah, this might be a difficult question for a podcast, but how do you like to structure an application like that? Literally the solution, you know.
So Wart was helping me with that. When we put our README files up, which I'm terrible at documentation, he suggested I take a picture of my Solution Explorer and put it up on the README of my hot towel, which was helpful. I like to put, you know, if I'm using MVC, which honestly I don't always do it. Sometimes I just use plain ASP.NET because I don't need routes. If I'm doing a single HTML page, I don't really need a view folder and a layout and a shared. But I like to put all the JavaScript inside of a folder called app. And I either put that inside of the root, and then I put all the JavaScript right in there, or in the past, I've put it inside the scripts folder. Mm-hmm. But I segregate my scripts that I've written into my own folder, and I always keep them separate from the scripts folder where you pull in jQuery and Bootstrap, because you don't go looking through those.
Yeah, and that's something I noticed was a change from the earlier releases of the single-page application template that ships with MVC, and you're nodding your head, were behind
we
that.
We had some influence on that.
Because before it was just, here's jQuery, and here's Knockout, and here's...
And here's your stuff,
here's
it's all mixed
my
in.
Model, and it's just all
it
in
It was a
list.
Big pile of spaghetti that somebody threw on a plate. And
right.
I asked some friends at Microsoft, I'm like, do you want the honest feedback, or do you want the polite feedback? And they're like, give us it all. Mm-hmm. And I threw it at them, and I was a little poignant since I don't longer work at Microsoft. So I did that. And honestly, everything I mentioned to them ended up happening for one thing. So every change that I suggested, which are about 8 or 9 of them, one of them was the folder structure. Huh. I'm like, people getting into this, it's supposed to be easy. Mm-hmm. And I open up the scripts folder. The original incarnation was something along the lines of, don't lie, 40 scripts. Mm-hmm. It was all the third-party scripts and the ones that Microsoft provided. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what they wrote, what somebody else wrote.
Hey, people like JavaScript. We're just trying to get into this JavaScript now. If we ship the internet of JavaScript, then everyone's going to be happy.
Oh, it was crazy. It was insane. And even little things. Then there were little things like, so there's two crowds. There's the crowds that are the JavaScript lovers in the first place, looking at it, who already have conventions in mind that are already out there. And then there's the .NET folks who have not done a lot of JavaScript and want to get into it. And a couple little things they'd done along the way were, in the beginning, everything was using Pascal case on the JavaScript side, which is what we do in .NET. Mm-hmm. But when you write a JavaScript app, the convention is camel case. Mm-hmm. So little things like that were changed, which are very easy changes. But it helps when you've been doing JavaScript for 10 years, and that's all you've done is camel case, and you see a product come out from Microsoft, and it's doing Pascal case. Mm-hmm. I've talked with some of these guys, and their immediate reaction is, well, that's garbage.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the product. It's just they see that Microsoft didn't do that, and bam. Mm-hmm. So by making little changes like that, it actually helps.
And there were some bigger ones, too. They didn't do a proper separation of the view model from the data access.
Well, I was being kind.
Yes. Well, you know, but I've been on that side because you're trying to make something simple and you're afraid to scare people away and overcomplicate it. So you throw everything all in one file so that they can find it. But throwing everything all in one file is the rest of us just blanch at that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of reminds me of the first time that I saw the very, very first Silverlight, the 101 where it...
With the JavaScript.
You had to write JavaScript against it, and it didn't support, like, fake namespacing in JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And then when they released all the WinJS samples, and they were all just, oh, function, 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 I'm like...
And that's how it was. There was no closures either. So everything was in the global namespace. Grant, this was beta, so I'll give them some slack. They did a great job.
There was stuff that I saw like that, too.
Yeah.
A lot of it. And I was like, what? Yeah. Right, and there's no onload. There's just all the functions, and then you write your procedural code to call all the functions in the right order.
And I think that's not knowing your audience. You know, they thought that they had to cater to some kind of lowest common denominator, but I don't think the lowest common denominator is actually going to take on this stuff in the early going. going anyway. So you might as well put something out there that you feel reasonably proud of. Don't go crazy with folders and folders and folders and folders, you know, but and make some compromises, but don't do something that's just manifestly
awful. I think in the end they ended up with, I'm going to guess, 4 JavaScript files. And that's all it really took to separate out what they did.
Hmm.
And now, keep that from where they started, where there was 30 in one folder. You had to find the 4 or
find
5
the 4
that they wrote and untangle them.
Demoed really well.
Actually, I think this demo's a lot better now because I can say, here's all these scripts and here's this app folder and here's all it's,
it yeah, actually it looks simple now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And it actually is quite simple.
Yep.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But they separated it out and little things like closures were a big part of it. Originally they had, I think, 3 different model files.
Mm-hmm.
And really it's just to-dos. It's a to-do app.
Right.
So they didn't need 3 files to figure out how to write a to-do. So they consolidated that. They separated out a data context file, which the idea of that was the models handle the data. You know, what is the data points, the properties? The data context handles go get it from the web API, save it, bring it back to the client. And then they had the view model, which is this screen, which is only one, which is fine. It has this information on it, so let's do the data binding with it. So you got 3 JavaScript files for that, and then an HTML file to show it, and a lot easier.
And guess so go ahead.
We'd had this epic, let's say, thread on the insiders list about MVC. I think it started off MVC versus web forms, and somehow it got into SPAs and MVC. And, of course, I took the middle of the road, and I said something that was completely, you know, not controversial, and I said, you don't need a framework to do MVC in JavaScript. It's so simple. But I didn't expand on that, and what I was going to do was put up a post where I had, okay, here's the model, HTML snippet. Here's the view, CSS snippet. Here's the controller, JavaScript snippet. Okay. That basically is, you know, what you need. If you want to separate out your presentation, all that, all the libraries and stuff make it easier to tie that stuff together. And, but it's, you know, so whenever I look at a JavaScript solution like that old SPA one was, and I see all these real funky interconnected things and all these files, and like, that's just too complicated for people to really get into. It kind of forced you to keep the whole stack and all the routes in your head when you're developing the app, whereas when you start to go the Angular backbone and some of the newer stuff, then they, you know, oh, I can separate these things out into their own spaces, and oh yeah, all this just maps to this path. And in some ways, it's kind of Sinatra Nancy framework kind of esque, where you've got the route right next to the thing that handles it, so you know what's tied to that route.
Right.
The same kind of thing with a lot of the SPA stuff that I see coming out of Microsoft and Angular. Just makes more sense, I think, to everybody, not just JavaScript developers.
I think we've all been figuring out over the last couple of years that if we want to do client-side presentational development, well, in this, we're talking JavaScript specifically here, that it's not okay to have a big mess in the client.
Right.
You know, and in the past, you know, 5-10 years ago, we wrote JavaScript when we had to.
Right.
Yesterday. Yes. But it was, you know, it's painful sometimes to just throw code up there.
Mm-hmm.
And one way I always start off, I do a session called JavaScript for .NET developers. And one of the first things I bring up is, you know, how many of you here, because they're all .NET crowd generally, and it's usually a big crowd, is how many of you have read, you know, at least 5 books in the last year on C#? And almost everybody raises their hand. And then I ask a question, how many of you read a JavaScript book, more than one JavScript book in your life?
That
and I usually get like
parts.
10 people. Right. And it's usually like 10 people in the crowd. And I'm like,
wow.
So we're not treating JavaScript like a language.
Yeah.
It is a language. If you've never read a book or watched a video on C#.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never watched Scott Allen do something on Pluralsight with us. If you haven't done that and you just tried to do C# willy-nilly, what would you end up with?
Code that I'm running into when I visit.
Right.
You end up with web
Stack Overflow.
Yes. It's like the people who used to read, you know, VB in 24 hours so many years ago. Now I'm a developer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you don't treat it like a serious thing, you're going to end up with a mess.
And it's not just that the code is messy. It's also that the architecture. So you end up, oh, look, I've got all these references to DOM things, and I don't clean them up, but then I get rid of the reference. You get leaks, you get all sorts of weird things that happen, and that's one of the things that people don't think about with SPAs. It's like, okay, they're used to the usual JavaScript model. Okay, I load the page, JavaScript runs, page goes away, everything gets cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
With SPAs, stuff stick around for, you know, they're treating the users, I've seen them, treat this like an app.
Right.
And you don't close down Excel every time that, you know, you need to do something else.
You keep your browser open for days at a time sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just walk away, you lock your machine, come back, start over again. So you've got to be able to
You have
run
to
that
clean home. Yourself up. You have to do... We heard a comment the other day, I'm taking it out of context, of, you know, a SPA app that was taking up 2 gig of RAM in a browser. And part of my issue is I didn't write it, I don't have any knowledge of this app, but my first question would be, well, it's probably bad memory management. It doesn't mean JavaScript bad. Mm-hmm. It means you probably designed it poorly.
My reaction was, give me 5 minutes with your server and I can take up 2 gigabytes of RAM too.
You know, wish thought about doing a coding challenge.
Exactly. Yeah.
Who can write the app that has the most memory leaks in the browser?
Oh, that would be the Outlook team. They would win every time, hands down.
That would be fun, actually. You win a prize.
Friends in memory.
What it means is taking on JavaScript as a real programming language, bringing the same kinds of principles that you used, the same kinds of disciplines that you used in whatever language you're familiar with, say it's C#, and bringing the same kinds of patterns down. So they all, you know, there's a notion of unit of work again, and repository again, and view model and view separation, and you know, not putting my code inside the HTML is like not putting my code in the XAML, mm-hmm. and not having my view models do data access when that's not their job. Part of what you were talking about of being able to look at a code base and understanding what is going on is expecting when you open a file that it's doing one thing that you whose job you recognize is the appropriate purpose.
SRP.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
It's my favorite concept. I'm not a huge pattern guy in general, but SRP is huge in everything you do. Yeah. Single responsibility. If I build a class, a file, an HTML page, it does one thing. Mm-hmm. That's it. If I do that and keep separation out, I mean, let's face it. We learn things as developers. The best thing everybody wants to look for is, if I get into something new, I don't have to relearn everything I've done in the last 10, 20 years. Mm-hmm. I want to take the skills I have and reapply them. And I think you can do that with JavaScript because that's what I've done. I've taken things that I've loved with MVC and MVVM and just applied them over to JavaScript. And yeah. I haven't learned anything new. I just learned a new language to apply it to.
Yeah.
It's the same with, you know, you write automated testing against your C# class. And then you go to the JavaScript and you're like, okay, where's the test? So, we don't have any tests. I'm like, well, why not?
Yes.
You look at their functions, like, oh, look, they're calling into jQuery, they're doing that, they're doing everything, you know, in there. They've got 5 different fields that they're manipulating.
There's no separation contents at all. No.
And yeah, it's like, just pull that stuff out and make that testable. That's the same reason that they explicitly made the design decision to not allow web workers to reference DOM nodes because, okay, so people are going to spin up all these web workers and then leave these references hanging around and the browsers are going to go nuts, leaking memory everywhere. So we're just going to take it, okay, no DOM references. So if we need to kill that thing, we're just killing stuff on the stack. Mm-hmm. Nothing that's hanging around causing a problem.
So when I do file new hot towel project, do I get some amount of little hello world code that'll show me the right path?
Yes. Yeah. It was a tough balance. It was, and actually Ward was restraining me. Mm-hmm. I was trying hard to not.
Search the Northwind database.
There's actually no database.
No, actually, oddly. we made a deliberate decision to minimize how much hot towel does when you start it because, like, there were 5 Vizixes that come out as part of this release. 3 of them are samples of the Hello World type. Mm-hmm. And we have one of them. The Breeze Spa template is one of those. 2 of them are not. Hot Towel is deliberately not. It has all the goodness that you want, and it has 2 simple pages just so you've got 2 pages to bounce between.
5 lines of code in each one.
Yeah.
You talked about that before, Ward, that's important to have a single-page application with more than one view is important.
Absolutely. It's not a single-page app if it has
yes,
one view.
Because that's one of the key pieces of a Spa is you're not going to build a Spa if you have one page.
Right.
For that, just build an MVC app and just have a view, you know?
And, you know, hurl some Ajax at it. While I believe...
I've got a logo.
You should see Ward's idea for a logo. When we came up with Hot Towel, was the animated GIF that you sent me?
Yeah, I did.
I'll leave that to the viewer's imagination, listeners.
So we did that deliberately. The 3 samples are really only one page, so that violates the one screen. So that violates the idea of where you're really going to go.
Those are to-do samples.
The to-do samples. But what they do is they show you a certain set of mechanics. So you can just get acquainted with some of the parts without being overwhelmed with what a Spa is. Mm-hmm. But and nobody's saying, wow, now that I've got those templates loaded, I'm going to build my app on that. In fact, what we recommend is, okay, now you've learned, clear the decks, start clean, start with Hot Towel. Mm-hmm. If you're going down the KO stack. And we hope that there will be people who bring in other kinds of things like an Angular stack.
Mm-hmm. Or a backbone
this does go back to rewinding a little bit when you talked about how, you know, we don't put our JavaScript in our HTML anymore in the onClick event, declarative and all that. That's one of the problems that I have with both Angular and Knockout is that at least Knockout uses the data dash attributes to kind of pepper all through HTML.
And Angular is the NG. Mm-hmm.
And Angular, you have to like define it as an app. It kind of
controls the horizontal and vertical, which no one, if you don't like, no one younger than us is going to get that reference.
Can I push back on that though? Because yeah. I don't, you know, I like Angular too, and I know you do.
I like
and for example, you don't have to use ng, you can use data-ng. So that's easily done. And yes, you have the one DataNG app at the top to sort of say, here, go do your thing. But that's the equivalent of the knockout apply bindings. Somebody has to sit somewhere to do it, and you could probably actually kick it off outside of the HTML if you wanted to. That's just the tradition. But that's that. The rest of it looks to me, in terms of the binding work that you do, straight up comparison with KO looks the same to me. KO
being is similar to the XAML declarative data bindings. If you didn't like XAML declarative data bindings, you're certainly not going to out of Angular's data bindings.
Yeah. It just seemed to fly in the convention of having this, again, going back to my CSS is the view and HTML is the model, going back to that separation of concerns. You want to make sure that, okay, so yeah, you have to write more JavaScript code to set up all your binding, and I know you can do that in Knockout, and I'm sure you can in Angular too.
You can actually take all of the declarative at it with binding too. There's actually a declarative binding plugin for Knockout where you can actually do all your bindings in your JavaScript. You can say this DOM element goes with this field.
I know some buddies who have written convention-based code around that too, so they don't even have. So they don't even set up binding. They just, okay.
So if it really bothers you, you can do it. You're right. But that out of the box, no, you just set up your bindings.
Caliburn was very much like that. Does Durandal do that at all?
No, he left that out.
He left it in.
Deliberately, because what we ended up doing a lot of the time, was putting the bindings in so the design tools work.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So, and also, it was the bind. Well, you know, if you have to draw these things, it's a pain in the ass.
Tooling.
Can we say
it
on the show?
Sure, say just I just did. And also, to write a binding in XAML, you had to say so many things that were easily forgotten that there was a real saving. Whereas here, all you're doing is you're saying it's a name. This is first name, all right? Mm-hmm. And you design your binding so to pick that up. And Angular is particularly good at this because you can write these directives, which effectively makes... I know we're departing from the KO thing, but it's effectively having markup that looks like HTML markup that is, in fact, doing the under-the-covers wiring that would be a pain to write yourself, and you shouldn't have to write yourself. This works for me.
What I do see a lot, though, in Knockout, what I hate about Knockout sometimes is, just like the VB in 24 hours, I'll see somebody who does a blog post on Knockout says, look how easy it is. Mm-hmm. And instead of just doing, like, in a data binding, you might see something like text colon first name. To do a binding. I want the text to be first name. That I'm fine with. But then you see, you know, this big long JavaScript thing hanging after it. Because you can actually put functions there if you want to. That's the bad side of it.
That's like, on click, right?
Yeah. Don't go there.
Exactly.
What you should do if you have to do a click event there is just, there's a click binding. Just do a click colon, go call this method. You know, and that's more like a behavior, for example, or a command from the XAML world.
It's not that hard to hook it up into the jQuery eventing either. You just wrap your Knockout event handlers with a jQuery event, a custom one, just trigger it.
Which I actually do sometimes. We talked about this yesterday a little. I talked to a lot of people here this week. Sometimes you don't just want a click event on a row. Sometimes you actually want to delegate with jQuery's delegation because you don't want to find an event handler on 1,000 things in your screen when you can just do one. Mm-hmm. So there's times you want to deviate from doing something just because you can to a way that you can do it more efficiently. But I get your point.
But those things, one of the great things about both Angular and Knockout is you can make them, you're effectively extending the binding system when you do these things. So in Knockout, you make a custom binding. In Angular, you make a directive so that you get back to the fundamental principle, which is that the view is busy with rendering and it has some declarations that don't know what they're doing, but they are enough for the binding system to connect the dots. The view model says, I don't know who's binding to me and I have no view awareness. Because I know that if I expose myself in a certain way, and I do like exposing myself, the binding will, the binding magic will bring it together. And that's the way those systems are designed to work.
Mm-hmm. So we're all, let's say, seasoned or old.
Well-seasoned
developers.
We're old.
Did you imagine 10 years ago that you would be writing JavaScript code?
Not like this. Writing JavaScript code 10 years ago, but I wasn't writing it like this. Mm. I was one of those poorly designed JavaScript
We all were.
Yes.
Yeah, we all had giant functions.
I can't believe that we're still writing it. We're writing something called a to-do app, and we're talking about it like it's something hard to do. That's the thing that's a killer, because I thought that was going to be well behind us. But it seems like we move forward a little bit, and then we just rewind the clock and start all over.
My catchphrase is, it's 2000X. Why do I have to worry about the database? why do I have to set up a connection to a database?
Yeah.
You know, there's things that we've learned along the way. One of them is that to get noticed, you have to have whatever the canonical example is. So I think this, I talked to the Microsoft guys about why a to-do app. And straight from some of the higher up guys like Scott Hunter and them is because it's like you need to have the to-do app. Every major library that's out there that does this in JavaScript has a to-do sample.
Because it's not the web API guys had already glommed onto the contact list.
Yeah, it's
actually, in this case, they are not to be blamed for it. You know, there's that site where you can go and find all the MVC, all the to-do apps.
The to-do MVC,
MVC thing. That's really what set the table.
And it's like the hello world for spas.
Right, right. I mean, you do need that kind of some level of it's understandable and you can get started with it. And then you go like, if you have the, you know, canonical example be the, what were some of those store app, you know, the Microsoft, some of those were just so much.
Contoso.
Right. Exactly.
boils down to
Contoso spa.
It's like,
we could do that.
I just lost it. What is the usual? Oh, a blog. So for a while there, all the web frameworks showed, here's how you build a blog. Because it was an easy domain space to handle. You could look at it and go, we got posts, we got comments.
And for a couple of years, you had Twitter apps going out the everything was a Twitter app.
And again, so it's the to-do list. It's just got a very small problem domain. You go, okay, I got things, and I want to mark them as either done or not done.
So it all gets down to what you get into this, where do you start? The first thing you want is not a blank slate like Hotel. The first thing you want is, show me what a spa is, show me how it should work. And that's where you go to one of the free templates, either the Ember one, the Breeze one, or the one that comes out of the box with Visual Studio. And it just shows you a very small to-do app of what a spa is. And then when you get that concept, then you say, I want to build my own. You don't want to go, this is why I wrote Hotel, you don't want to go ripping out 14 files out of the demo and rebuilding your own.
Okay.
You go to Hotel and you say, okay, I want my app to be a blah, blah, blah site. And you go build it that way.
And Hotel completes the stack because there was no SAMI, there was nothing for screen stuff in the samples.
And that's
there's
one of no the require. Pieces.
Or if Angular, which has its own data, DI for IOC substitute.
Phone dependency injection.
And I guess this circles back to something we were talking about earlier when we were talking about restructuring to be like a real programming language and having files that are focused on a single purpose. The price tag for that is a lot of files. And
a lot of small files.
A lot of small files that are focused on what it is that you want to do, but there are a lot of them, and you do not want to, in JavaScript, sit there and try and play them in the right order. So you've got to get acquainted with DI right out the gate, at which, you know, seasoned developers are comfortable with.
And the nice thing about the Randall is it makes it dead simple to use requires, which I can't stress enough. If you've gone down this road yourself with requires and AMD and try to figure out how to use that, when my background's like, you know, Ninject and Unity.
Right.
Because that's easy. You go into requires and AMD, you're like, this is just killing me. Try to figure out how to make this work.
My callback needs a callback?
Yeah, it's like... And the configuration for requires, I can't tell you how many commits that when I wrote my first real big spa app with Ward, I can't tell you how many commits we had on just the configuration file for requires to figure out what's the right way.
Trying again.
Durandal something takes doesn't play, out. You know, a lot of the libraries didn't play well with it. And so you're trying to figure out how to make everybody a good citizen. That's where you really go wrong with requires, trying to make everybody be a good citizen. Mm-hmm. What Durandal said is that's a waste of time. So third-party libraries load this old-fashioned way as scripts or bundles or whatever you want. Don't even try and pretend those are part of your DI structure, but presumably you're not having a lot of third-party libraries. Yeah. And you're in control of your apps, and they can play well, and that's part of the simplification.
You can't control a third-party library, what it does. So if it does AMD or it doesn't do AMD, why should you have to care? And that's kind of where Durandal came in and said, you know what, let's let them load traditionally. But the code you write, you literally wrap your module, your SRP, inside of two lines. At the top, you say define, these are the dependencies for this module. At the bottom, you put a curly brace. That's easy. I can say that. I can say when I read a
and
view
it looks
model,
like a constructor.
I need this.
Constructor injection. It looks like constructor injection. You're using it like constructor injection. And once you've got that in your head and you see it, it pops right at you and you don't even think about it anymore.
But you still run into the, this sadly, this is part of HAVA, the tooling problem. So you end up with lots of small files, but a lot of the tools out there, and Visual Studio is getting better, and even Vim is getting better. They can't understand and link all these things that are just kind of closed over and dynamically generated. You've done all this, these funky things to make it fit into your good programming model, and the tools just can't keep up enough. So it does get a little harder for a novice programmer, not only the JavaScript, but even just programming in general, to kind of get in and say, okay, so I've got, 50 JS files, and they all have one or two methods in them. I don't know what's going on.
To me, it doesn't look any different than any of the C# stuff I've ever done. And I don't have any more JavaScript files than I had C# files. I have them arranged. I don't try and go into a folder structure until I need it. And we have all been through this. When we start, we try and keep it flat, but there comes a certain point at which you say, well, I guess my view models belong to, if that's your style. You figure out what you need to do. But I haven't found that kind of confusion with the stuff that we've been doing.
And the folks that I've worked with haven't had that. The only time they've had that is when I shoved it all in one folder to try to make it easy. I was trying to help some people get started on this, and in the early goings of this, I just said, well, I'm going to forget the folder structure and just put them all in one place. And that was an immediate friction point for them of, even with 10 files, like, you're upsetting my chi. It was all off the place.
Well, that's one of the confusing things I found introducing people to MVC is to get in there. I go, okay, they got views. Okay, it's the V part. What's content? Wait, that's style sheets and images?
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be where my database goes or my, things in storing my files?
So it seems like we've talked about a lot of caveats around building SPAs here or just caveats about programming JavaScript. So if you could name two things that everyone should do before trying out HotTow, and I'll put in number one, which is watch John's most excellent Pluralsight course on SPAs. What else would you recommend developers do before they even start down this path? Is there something?
I think that the first thing is to, assuming you're a developer, to start out with, not like you're having your mom look at this, my mom isn't a developer. So if you're going down that road, I would first try to remember that the stuff you're getting into, and this is less of an action than it is a mindset. If you're not in the right mindset, it's not going to work. Get in the mindset of the stuff you do now, you can apply. All your separation, all that stuff you've learned, it's not like you're relearning from scratch. Mm-hmm. You're not going back to be a junior developer anymore. Mm-hmm. It's all there.
Yep.
The second thing I would do is treat, and that goes with the separation concept as well. The second thing is treat the code as a real language. So there's a couple of great JavaScript books that are out there. The Good Parts is one of them. One of my other favorites, though, is there's a patterns book, and I cannot pronounce the author's name, but it's another O'Reilly book.
Yeah. Dmitry Buzz something.
Stoyanovich.
Stoyanovich. Stoyanovich. Yeah. Okay. But it's a great patterns book, and it talks about things. There's got to be about 80 patterns in the book, but there's a couple really good ones, like the module pattern. And the module pattern in JavaScript is very similar to basically just creating a class kind of structure in the .NET world. And once you do that, a lot of those bad things that happen in JavaScript, like memory leaks and global pollution scope and blah, 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 they go away. And it makes it easier for you to grok. For me, I'm always looking for what's my entry point. Mm-hmm. And if you learn how to do the module pattern in JavaScript, that's where I've seen, I call it raviolis. That's where I've seen a lot of people go the aha moment. So first, remember you don't have to relearn everything. Second, go look at the module pattern. It's not that it's a new pattern. It's one that will help you ease into this without creating 4,000 lines of function.
Well, I agree with all those things. I think also use your radar, your spider sense or whatever the heck it is. If it smells bad, stop.
Cat sense.
For help. Cat sense, whatever it is. If it smells bad, stop and ask for help, because there's actually more help now than there used to be. Mm-hmm. There are more people who can kind of steer you out of trouble. And so get that. Because it doesn't have to smell as bad as, I want to say it doesn't have to smell bad. It doesn't have to smell as bad as it used to.
Okay. And one of the hurdles I've seen people go through, usually one of the first questions people have is, should I pick this framework, that framework? Which library should I use? And to me, it's all about what you have experience with. Where you go, like, I know Scott prefers Angular. I prefer the Knockout, the HotTow stack. Mm-hmm. Some of us might prefer Ember or Backbone. They're all good. And people don't want to hear that, though. They want to hear what's a way to go. But find one that feels more natural to you and go that direction, because it really doesn't matter which one you choose as long as you pick something that's But don't look at it as...
We need a flowchart. Maybe a single-page application. It says, do you like this or this? And then guides you to your stack.
If you like data binding, you know, I'd immediately point you at Angular or Naka.
Right.
Okay. Right? If you like pure MVC and you want to write your code yourself with less things happening, Backbone's a good choice.
Yeah, that would be an interesting application. It could be like when you go to the eye doctor and they do which looks better, this or this? And you pick one, you know, the two different syntaxes, and it would guide you to the stack that you should use.
Do you want to, almost the opposite of the spectrum, Mark? Hot Towel is the, I'm going to put seven things together that make sense for you, like the seven samurai.
Is that omakase?
And the Ember side is the, you don't need anything but me. I'm going to tell you how to do it and where to go, and I'm going to do wonderful things for you.
Right.
But you're going to follow this thing.
Yeah.
And it is great.
Okay.
So depending on what kind of person you are, those are good choices to make.
Okay.
Wasn't there something like that where you stepped through and you said, I like to do it like this?
I heard one today called Choose Your Own Application. It's like Choose Your Own Adventure, but Choose Your Own Application.
Somebody's working on that.
Yeah. Oh, no, I forget who.
I forget who it is.
But the idea is, you know, and this actually included even server-side and picking server-side technologies.
And they have SPA in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
On the other hand, what I hear a lot are people who are overwhelmed and they don't really know how to choose. At this point, you got to find people who can curate things for you and give you a stack that works together. So that we got to yours about pick one.
Right.
All right. You do need that. Don't be paralyzed by trying to understand all the different variations, or you'll just spin and get lost.
I've had one insight recently, which is, well, I was looking around the table, and a lot of us have some experience with Silverlight over the past several years.
What's that?
Exactly. But I thought it's interesting.
Take that back.
What's interesting to me is that, you know, we're talking about these concerns like long running apps, worrying about memory in the browser, thinking about like, if somebody keeps the browser open for 6 hours, if I make a change on the server, they're not going to see that change until they refresh, which might be never, right? And all these kind of things like, and so you've got to think about how your application flows and how it works. And I was thinking, you know, for some of us doing Silverlight like 6 years ago or whatever, you know, that if I knew the future in 2006, would I have invested a lot of time in Silverlight? And I think I would have invested at least that as much as I did because of some of these patterns we're talking about, because of things like 6 years ago, you know, like doing production video on the web when you really couldn't very much with HTML5, doing things like, like needing to understand MVVM pattern and binding and all that kind of stuff. So I'm wondering, I guess, from you guys, what you think, how much of your experience with, you know, XAML technologies applied, or how that, if that helped or hurt, or, you know, how that transition has worked.
It helped me. A lot of what I do in SPI, people have made suggestions to me that it looks a lot like how I did stuff with Silverlight and with WPF. Mm-hmm. And that's true. That's not unintentional. The patterns that I liked in Silverlight, I applied over to SPA, the ones that worked. There's things that are very different. For example, one thing I loved about XAML was layout and design inside of Blend. I love Blend. Mm. Just easy. Layout with CSS can be very painful, depending upon which browsers you're using, and you might want to just jump off the building and, you know, that's where, again, easing in place, plug Scott's great new course here on Bootstrap at Pluralsight. I use Twitter Bootstrap a lot. It's kind of like the... It's a very easy way to style and do layout in the web and apply things that you knew and loved in the Silverlight world or XAML world over to the browser. Because one of the most painful things is I just typing into HTML, and I never suggest to people, just start going crazy on your HTML and then run it eventually to see what it looks like. You want to have some concept of what you're designing and the layout goes. And not always have designers sitting next to them. I know I don't. But, you know, so all those skills are really applicable. I don't think there's anything I did in Silverlight that I just threw away.
Mm-hmm. I worry a little bit because I want to say that it's going to be easier for a Silverlight developer to program a SPA than it will be for somebody who has traditional HTML web experience. But since I never had traditional HTML web experience, I can't say that. So I'm going to leave that for somebody else. And I will just say this, that if you did Silverlight development, the kinds of things that we've at least set forward in these templates with these libraries will make you feel right at home. So your Silverlight experience will be there. You'll already know about asynchronous programming. You'll already have the MVVM pattern under your belt. You'll already have been probably using some form of DI. So it will just feel like they moved you You moved your Silverlight mental model into this, and what you have to learn is a language, and what the heck, we've all learned languages. That's the languages, for some reason, seem to me to be the easy part. Mm. The hard part is, what are the patterns, how do I recognize what's going on, what are the right mechanics, and, or not necessarily right mechanics, but what are the mechanics that make for a successful application, and if you build it in Silverlight, all that stuff feels the same.
So when I built the Code Camper spa application for Pluralsight course that I did, I intentionally built it as a intermediate level type thing. And I knew some people were really going to be upset about, wow, this is too hard to follow along. And a lot of it, quite frankly, is very difficult coding that I kind of demonstrate. And it was painful for me to do. And I'm sure it was painful to watch in some cases, see how it works. Cause there were some places where it was like 500 lines of JavaScript to get something to happen. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did what I did there was I wanted to show people who've never seen a spa that, first of all, break through the barrier of, I can't do that in the web. I need something stronger, more powerful. And now that you've seen an app that can do quite a bit, what I'm doing now is I'm backing up and I've rewritten Code Camper in a much simpler format than what I'm calling a jump start. And that's where Hot Towel came out of. Mm. I'm like, you know, let's now show the easy way to do it. It doesn't have to be this complicated. Let's ease you in. And now I'm writing the same kind of app with about, I don't know, a quarter of the code, get the same functionality. So the idea there is, you know, just plug my course. The new course is to walk you through. It's not so hard. But I didn't start there on purpose because if you don't know what you can do, mm-hmm. why would you bother? Mm-hmm. If someone tells you spa is horrible and you can't do anything in it, mm-hmm. why would you ever try to go there? So the goal for me was to show people, look, first of all, get rid of the shock factor. You can do cool stuff. Then take a step back and figure out what do you want to build.
So we've been talking for a while and maybe now it's time to lift this up a little bit. First of all, how difficult was it for you to build Hot Towel, not put everything together, but how difficult was it for you to get something to appear in Visual Studio? That's question number one. And question number two, a very leading question. A lot of our other listeners are pretty sophisticated. If they wanted to do something similar, could they do that, or is it just restricted to intimate friends with Microsoft like yourselves?
We'll start at that one. No, anybody can do it, and you should. So I've had questions I mentioned earlier about why not Angular, why not Backbone? Because I happen to prefer the stack I chose, mm-hmm. and Ward preferred the stack he chose. But you can build one, and anybody can. There's a blog post, you know, we can give you guys the link, post mm-hmm. up there, because I don't remember off the top of my head, on how to build a physics for Visual Studio. And once you do that, you can upload it to the gallery, and I don't think that works just yet.
No, but it will by the time they hear this, I hope.
Yes. Right now, they're actually hosting it on the ASP.NET site for us, because the gallery wasn't working yet. But you'll be able to upload your own, and then people can just download that physics, and then install it. Now, how hard was it for me and for Ward? For Ward, it took 10 days, day and night, to get it going. For me, I waited until his 10th day, and then it took me about 5 hours.
Right.
But all of it's open source.
Which Ward either means that I'm really stupid, which is entirely possible, or it was hard.
You can actually go to GitHub for both of our physics and grab the code, pull it, fork it, and you know just change everything.
Yeah, my physics is on GitHub, so go look.
Yeah. And I should mention, too, there's a Hot Towelette. So, some people don't like MVC. They want ASP.NET without the views and the controllers. So I created Hot Towel, and then its little sister is Hot Towelette, who just has the same exact stuff, except there is no MVC. Okay. And the biggest difference is the index page is not in the views folder. It's at the root.
Right.
And there's no route folder.
Just saying, little red towelette, and you'll be there.
Somehow it works better in person when we can see your leopard skin shirt.
I was just wondering.
Let's be clear, that's Ward's leopard skin shirt.
We need to include the photo on the show.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that moist towelette would probably be better. When you don't want to get completely in the water, you just want a moist towelette.
Was that the question, though, that you were asking?
Yes.
Is how easy is it to build your own pathway and share it with others?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, high level, can you summarize those 10 days of pain? What exactly did you do?
Was it despair? One day to make it and 9 days to wait for it to get accepted in the VS gallery?
No, it's not
in the gallery yet because the gallery isn't quite ready. We will be by the time you hear this, but it wasn't at the time. Mostly it was... No, you know, it's no documentation.
You should blog this.
I know. Maybe. better yet, though, than blogging it would be for them to improve the process. And they've approached me to try and take that out and try and make it easy for other people to do it in less than 5 hours. Because 5 hours is too long. If you've ever, you haven't, but if you were to look at a physics, you would see the same file mentioned in about five different ways, mm-hmm. in five different other files. And you know, there's a certain rule, like if it's over here, it has to be as content, but if it's over here, it should be built as what you're supposed to do. And if you don't forget, if you forget to mention it in a certain way, in a certain place, then it won't show up. And then in another place, they only showed me the XML, and I had 100 files, not mine. It was almost all trying to carry forward the MVC stuff. Yeah. And nobody quite knew what the secret sauce was or the incantation. And so that took a lot of it. Another part of it was that we wanted to use NuGet packages to drive it. And,
because otherwise the alternative was to say, put every NuGet package you wanted into the VizX.
Right. Right.
And that would have been like, you know, 8 meg.
But yeah, there was only one choice. You could either get the NuGet packages from a specially registered location on your C drive. Or from a package that you had in your VizX. You couldn't do both. And they didn't know what to do about that. It turns out I talked to the NuGet team and they said, well, we are at the same time creating a new tooling that allows you to specify that some of the packages come from the special location and some of them are in the VizX. It made a huge difference, but
it meant that we could have taken about, we took about 12 NuGet packages that we both used in our thing that were just from the Microsoft ASP.NET team, and we didn't have to include them anymore. They're already on the machine.
Right.
Right? So we just wanted to point over to the Microsoft folder for that and then point, you know, for knockout.
Our own stuff.
Our own stuff, point at our folder.
Okay.
So it just takes a while to, you know, left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to have it talk to Howard, and then they added this new feature, and you know how it goes.
Yeah, it took
but the end result is a zip file with some XML and all your content.
The end result is like, the end result is simple.
Yeah.
But there's just too much cat herding.
Okay.
And
maintaining
is
not
that.
Too difficult.
No, it's not. It's just a regular Visual Studio project. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have to add or move something, you only have to touch 10 places.
Okay. All right. Four.
Okay. And so well, that's got to be fixed.
Let's reiterate the step. You got to download the VizX template.
Yes.
You got to create it. You got to have Microsoft add a new feature to a product, and then you can create your template.
That's what I had to go through.
Talk to Howard.
Right.
That's what I would suggest now is forking Ward's or my VizX.
Just going from that.
And then using that as a base. I did it for his. I forked his, changed everything for what I needed, and then went forward. And at that point, it was a couple hours of work. The hardest thing for me was, as Ward mentioned, I opened up the four main files where literally you change like a package version. I had to go into four files and change it. Mm-hmm. What I did is open them all up in Notepad++. And I would just search for that term.
Yeah.
And then go find them and change
it. Notepad++ has a replace in all feature too.
It does. But I was too worried to do
that. Yeah, that's dangerous. So. I've done that wrong before when I had like 30 tabs open in Notepad++. Yes.
It's just horrible right now, but they're going to fix it. Yeah. They're going to fix it. You know, and there's another one. I'll just get in case somebody runs into it. You update the name of a package that you want to use, right? And you've done that, and everything is great. And then they load it, and it crashes. Why did it crash? Because that package had some DLLs, and your project reference was referring to an old package location, and you forgot to go into the project. And, you know, because who goes into the raw project? You know, I mean, right. Regular guys don't. I do all – I live in there, but – and go in and bump that. They just got
to
provide
if they want it to
tooling
be easy, they make it a little easier.
To
and
make
all of it's tooling.
Work.
It's all tooling, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Can you fix that, John?
I'll try.
Okay, good.
This afternoon.
But it can work. You look at it and you say, this could be so much easier.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I'm confident that they will.
And there's dead stuff in there, too. Dead stuff, I mean, like, there's things that Ward and I fought over, like, we're not icon makers. Mm-hmm. So we spent time making icons for things, and then afterwards find out, oh, those aren't even used.
Oh. Like, I was going to ask earlier, so there's no hot towel icon.
Well, there is.
Okay, yes. But the one that you
it just doesn't
use,
show where you really
it doesn't
want
show
it.
Where you, yeah, you think it would show up in Visual Studio?
Right.
No, it's the standard little square with the window.
Oh.
You know.
So where does it show?
So the hot towel icon shows there's a NuGet package. Most of what I did, I made the conscious decision to make hot towel and hot towelette NuGet packages. So you can also get them from there. But those are useful once you create the project. If you want to do file new, the VizX actually pulls down the hot towel NuGet package and then adds a couple other things like web config and, you know, global ASAA type stuff.
Yep. It also shows when you list your extensions, you're in there and then you got the logo.
Hot towel is blue. Hot towelet is red. So that's the way you know.
Okay. And Breeze is a beautiful, breezy blue.
Well, it's just about time to wrap up. So this is your opportunity for any last minute things that are on your mind or to talk about any talks
pimp
or pimp your stuff time and Ward, if you could tell us what you're going to wear tomorrow, so we can be mentally prepared.
I don't think that's possible.
You better. First of all,
be mentally prepared. For this.
I just have to mention the funniest moment at MVP Summit so far was in the ASP.NET session, and Scott Hansman went up to the speaker and said, "I'm looking for Ward Bell. Can you announce and have him stand up?" Well, Ward was wearing, what were you wearing that day? It was like swirly, bright colored pants and a bright orange, like, and we were like, it's the guy that glows.
Like, you can't find Ward Bell?
So we decided Scott has reptilian eyesight, and he only sees you if you move. It's motion sensitive, so just don't move in your.
And then yesterday, Ward wore the, what do you call that outfit? The
red. It was a red zoot suit.
Red
zoot
with the hat.
With the red hat. I mean, bright red. I mean, yeah. Glowing red. Now he's got gold and
leopard.
Leopard.
I'm wearing a
lure.
I'm wearing a leopard velour top and I know people really want this, and gold lame and cowboy boots. I have to keep tomorrow a secret, I'm sorry.
We're going to rename the summit the Ward Bell Fashion Show. Well,
so Fashion Week.
Somebody has made a Twitter account that my clothes token. It was you.
No, it wasn't me.
Ward Bell's outfit, yes.
Somebody is out there impersonating my clothing. And
I hear Ward Bell's outfit went out with Peter Ritchie's hair the other night and tore up the town.
The best part about walking around with Ward at a conference is nobody notices you there.
No. Yeah,
you just blend right into the walls.
You're running from the cops. I wouldn't even see you.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a chick magnet when I walk around with this stuff. That's what it's all about. So anyway, John, why don't you talk about something
courses, anything?
Yes. So we mentioned Pluralsight. I do a lot of that stuff. I've been doing a lot of JavaScript and SPA stuff with Pluralsight lately, just because that seems to be an area that a lot of .NET developers are getting into. So I'm trying to provide that perspective for .NET developers to get into it. Mm-hmm. I recently did a TypeScript course, a jumpstart into that with Dan Wallin. And I do a lot of Bootstrap lately, which Scott's got a great course on. And then I've got two SPA courses with Pluralsight. One came out last September, and then the other one will be coming out in about 3 weeks, doing a jumpstart. And that's been pretty much all I've been doing lately. Okay. So,
and for my part, we're grateful that Microsoft selected Breeze to talk about and make a part of the scene, and has started to let people know that SPA is a serious avenue for application development. And with that, we're hoping that people who were thinking that they might want to build HTML JavaScript applications, but aren't sure if it's for real, A, they'll feel like maybe this is real now. And if they want to know how to do it, they'll come to us, IdeaBlade, and ask for our help in getting going, building those applications.
And what's the license on Breeze?
Well, I have, it's free for everybody, but I have a special price for you, John.
Oh, good.
It's MIT licensed. It's free. You know, the business model around it is that people who can afford to pay for help, we are there to help.
All right. Thank you very much for being on the show. This was a long one, but I think that's because we had a lot of interesting things to talk about. So thanks for listening.